Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. According to the AARP, at least 90% of people in a recent survey say they want to age in their own home. But sometimes health and mobility issues can make that hope a challenge.
Linda Schrager has committed most of her professional life to helping people and families navigate this phase of life. Schrager has more than 37 years of experience working in the field of geriatrics, with over a decade of that spent in direct home care. Her book is Age in Place, a guide to modifying, organizing, and decluttering mom and dad's home. The book suggests guidelines and offers tools for readers to help make good choices and to arrive at a living situation that works well for seniors and their caregivers.
Schrager notes there are often signs that aging parents could need help, but Schrager says it's important to address those situations and have a conversation of what should we do in a respectful manner.
Schrager joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski and started by explaining what activities of daily living, or ADLs, are and how they affect the equation.
Well, activities of daily living, those are the kinds of things that we, all of us, do every single day. We toilet ourselves, we wash ourselves, brush our teeth, complete our grooming and hygiene, feed ourselves, bathe, and transfer. So, in other words, get from one surface to the other safely. Those are the ADLs. The instrumental ADLs are more a little higher up. They take a little bit more cognitive functioning and physical functioning. So that, for example, is making a meal, doing the laundry, cleaning the house, going out to get the mail and the newspaper, taking out the garbage. Those are the IADLs, using the phone, managing meds, medications, that type of thing.
Many seniors are probably reluctant to admit that living at home is becoming difficult, but how do you broach this conversation, this question of what do we do appropriately? You know, what are the requirements from all parties involved to go about this in an organized and respectful manner?
Well, you know what? The respectful manner was a very important word, and I'm glad that you said that, because there are so many things out there these days that we're having the situation where the kids feel like they're parenting their parents now. And I try to tell the people that I work with that that's really not true, and it never should be true, that our parents are our parents, and we need to respect them no matter what, and give them the respect that they deserve. So going into the conversation with that in mind is a first really good step. And what happens is we don't tend to broach the subject for so many different reasons, because we feel it's uncomfortable, because we're worried what mom and dad might think. But the key to the whole thing, and what I talk about in my book, if people get nothing else out of it, they should get that. Don't wait for the crisis to occur. Don't wait till dad breaks his hip or mom has a heart attack and they're in the hospital and now they're going to come home and the house is on two levels and it's difficult for them to manage and there's no help and there's no plan in place. So the key to the whole thing is to sit down while everybody's healthy, while there is no crisis occurring, and say, look, mom and dad, the way to do this is to gather data first. The kids should go to mom and dad's house, and it's not just one visit, it's a few visits, and actually watch them go through the house, literally from getting out of the car, going up the steps, into the home, and all through the house, in the kitchen, on and off the couch, on in and out of the bathroom, on and off the bed, etc., and really keep an eye on them and see how they do with all of the activities of daily living, and then gather that data and information. Then say to mom and dad, we need to have a talk. We're worried about you, and you always bring it on yourself. You don't say, you guys are not safe, or, you know, you're going to have a problem. You say, we are worried. We love you. We care about you. And we want to have a conversation to share with you the data that we've gathered, to share with you our observations that maybe some of the things that you're doing have become difficult and you're not doing them as safely as you could. But the good news is we're all on the same page that we want to help you stay in this house. So what we want to do is sit calmly and organize a plan so that you can, in fact, stay here. So assuming, and by the way, the first thing should be, what are your wishes, Mom and Dad? Because we're assuming that they want to stay there. AARP has done tons of research and has noted that at least 90% of people want to age in their own home where they are. So we need to decide that that is, in fact, true. And if that is their wishes, then we say, look, we can help you. There's tons of things that we can do in this house, modifications that we can make, help that we might need to bring in to keep you here safely. So it shouldn't, in the end, be a stressful conversation, because it's not like we're saying you're on your way to assisted living, Mom and Dad. What we're saying is we want to keep you home. We want to help you.
So when these conversations have been had and, say, someone calls in your help to help establish a safe environment, when you walk up to a client's house, what are you looking for to make changes, or what are you seeing that already makes it safe?
Well, I literally get out of my car and look at the driveway where I put my car and start from there. So I will go, let's say, in through the front door. I'll look at the steps and the front porch and the entrance area. There's often problems right there. You want to look to see the height. Some of the older homes, you know, the steps aren't even maybe to code if they're really older homes and they're too high or they've started to crumble a little bit. So you want to look there. Is there a good railing? It's always helpful to have two instead of one, one on both sides. And then when we get up to the front door, is it a high threshold to get in from the landing into the house? And then I start going through the house room by room. What I do, though, is I do this with the person involved. So you might be able to, you know, jog through your house without any problems at all. But my 80-year-old client might be toddling around a little bit, dragging her walker, and I want to see how she does in each room. So I will literally have her go into the living room, sit down on the furniture. That's often a problem. But you know what's interesting? The second highest amount of falls in a home occur in the living room, which people would never guess usually. But the reason why is because of the furniture. It's low, it's mushy, it's hard to get off of. So I'll look at things like that, and then I will maybe make a simple suggestion of taking the coffee table, pushing it out 6 inches, 8 inches, and it can make all the difference in the world. Go through into the kitchen. The kitchen is another biggie. A lot of things can happen in the kitchen, and a lot of time is spent in the kitchen. It's an important room. So I'll look at how the person is doing in the kitchen. Often the problem is that the cabinets are just way too high, especially as we get older and we get a little shorter. I'll look at the things that they have and see where they've placed the items that they use the most and suggest that they'll take the things that they do use the most and put them on the first shelf or even on the counter. It's okay to leave your most used things right out where you can access them versus fighting every day to reach that plate or bending way down in a low cabinet to get that favorite pot out. You know, I'll see the placement of the stove, how the refrigerator is, and maybe make suggestions. One of the big obstacles, of course, in any home is if it's a two-story home. That's a red flag to me that this could be trouble down the line. There are so many things that one can do, though, if that's the case. First of all, if they have a full bath on the first floor, that's the key. Then they can take a room, the dining room, the den, the office on the first floor, make that into a bedroom, and pretty much live on the first floor. And many people end up doing that if they can and if they cannot manage the stairs. If that's not a possibility, and if they want to get upstairs, there are stair lifts. And then the biggie is the bathroom. The bathroom is where most falls occur. And obviously, you would guess that because, first of all, there's a potential for a wet surface. And secondly, there's a lot of transfers going on. There are a lot of change in surface. They're walking in, they're sitting on the toilet, they're getting up off the toilet, they're getting into the shower, they're getting out of the shower. So there's many little problems that could happen in the bathroom. But again, very doable. There are many different devices, shower chairs, transfer benches. Of course, grab bars are probably the biggest modification that I find myself making in any home.
All of these physical changes to a home are relatively straightforward once you assess and see what needs to be done. And while aging in place is something we all want, what happens when we need that 24/7 care but can't afford it? Do you think it's more affordable to make these changes to be able to stay at home with physical changes and a network of people versus, say, a senior living facility or even a nursing home?
Well, you know, that is a good question. And it actually somewhat depends on where a person lives, because assisted livings and nursing homes do vary by where they're located. That said, a nursing home can be very, very expensive. It can be average around $100,000 to $120,000 per year. So you need to figure that out as far as expenses are concerned. Assisted livings, they range from about $47,000 or $80,000 to about $60,000 a year. So then the question is, if you get private help. Now, private help isn't inexpensive either. A home health aide in New York State, for example, 40 hours a week, not 24 a day, but half days, let's say even, is about $55,000. So the question is, you do have to look at your expenses and figure it out. If you can make the modifications in the person's home, and if the person can afford part aids, maybe not 24/7, but they could perhaps get private pay help and augment that with some more creative things like family, friends, and neighbors. So there are some ways to creatively get help almost around the clock and keep them home.
Aging in place is not necessarily the same as dying in place, but do you think that this is what most people feel it transitions to, or that this is what they want? You know, with today's medical needs and advancements, you know, has that made our declines and subsequent deaths, you know, worse and a little more complicated? You know, whereas, say, 80 years ago, it might have been more straightforward.
Well, this is true. I mean, you know, the whole healthcare arena has changed, and there are so many movements out there now that are saying that we do too much, you know, that we have such advanced care available that we keep people going for too long and we spend too much money keeping them going, when in fact, if we, you know, kind of let nature take its course, it might be a better way to go. So certainly, you know, that could be an issue. We are living longer because technology and medical advances are keeping us around longer. And unfortunately, the flip side of that is the caregivers are getting less. We have less people out there in the arena to care for all these people who are getting old and sick. People, yes, back in the day, their thought was to just, you know, I opened the book by saying that I'm an occupational therapist and I do home care. So I treat people in their homes most often after something acute has happened, a broken hip, a knee replacement, a stroke, a heart attack. And I went into this one person's house and she said, I just want you to know that I'm going out of this house horizontally or not at all. So that was her. And then I opened the book with that because I'll never forget Josie and her statement to me. And I got that. But, you know, that's and that is what people hope for. But, you know, medically and with all these advances, obviously the sicker someone is and the more medical care they need, that might not be possible anymore.
Right. And sometimes things happen at home where then transfer to a hospital is required. So what kind of paperwork, key things that should be filed somewhere, how should that be organized and to let the kids know of the parents where this is so that it's easily accessible and ultimately done before something acute happens?
That's such a good question. And first of all, I talk about making a healthcare notebook. And that's such a simple thing where you just literally take a three-ring binder and you get it together. And in that binder, you put all the important health information. So the list of doctors, the list of medications, the list of hospitals, the diagnoses, the medical and surgical history, and all of those things, and doctor's notes when applicable. And that's a binder that I feel that people should keep. I say to people, make what I call Command Central, which is a place in the house, which can be anything. It can be a table, a desk, you know, the top of a dresser that's been cleared off, whatever it is. But everybody knows that's Command Central, and that's where you go to find all of this information. So that's a great way of keeping everybody on the same page. Then the other thing is, in the back of this book, I call it the mother list, vital documents that you need to be able to locate. And then that goes through the legal things such as the will, the power of attorney, the healthcare proxy, alternates, insurance information, and their, you know, if they have a long-term care policy, et cetera, any supplemental policies, and then identifying information, where's their Social Security, vital records, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that list can be a little overwhelming, but the key is if someone is home and they're healthy and they're doing well, if they can take this vital documents list and make a map for their children or their loved ones of where all these papers are, it is really, really life-changing.
You mentioned before people don't often like to broach this subject because it's uncomfortable or it's broached a little too late after something happens. What are some key things for us to keep in mind when weighing options of helping those we love age in place? And how do we change the narrative to have these discussions sooner?
Well, so that's the thing. If what we want to do is we want to gather that data, and we want to note, because, you know, nobody wants to admit that they're feeling sick or they're having a problem until they really have that problem. So it's important that there's a good family dynamic, that the kids do visit and they do go see mom and dad. And you know, I make a suggestion, take a walk with your parent through the house as if you've never been there before. Kind of look at it with fresh eyes and have this dialogue. This isn't the kind of thing where you can do long distance without really seeing your parents. And when you get all those little pieces of information in a row and you're getting your ducks in a row, that's when you have to say, you know what, we need to have a talk. And it might not be comfortable to start the conversation, but it's worth not to have it. You know, there's a lot of things that we have to deal with in our life that might not always be comfortable, but that's not a reason or an excuse not to have the conversation.
Linda Schrager is a registered occupational therapist, a master's level social worker, and a certified aging in place specialist. She's also author of the book Age in Place, A Guide to Modifying, Organizing, and Decluttering Mom and Dad's Home. She spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find out more information and helpful tips at WUWM.com.